YUN interview with George McMurtry Godley in New York City on April 20th, 1990 by Gene Krasno. Good. Now, Ambassador Godley, for the record, would you explain what your position was in the Congo and about when it was that you were there?
I went to the Congo in the spring of 1961 as a DCM, Deputy Chief of Mission. And shortly after I arrived, the ambassador, Claire Timberlake, left, and I was chargé for about a year. By then, in 62, I returned to the Department of State and was the director of the Office of Central African Affairs, which included the Congo. And then I was there until 1963, I went as ambassador to the Congo, replacing Ed Gunyan, who you ought to interview.
Okay. All right, so you came in the spring of 1961.
Correct.
Correct. So at that point, the Adula government had not quite been formed.
Correct. It was before Lavania.
However, your arrival was after the death of Lumumba.
Oh, yes. Yes. One bit after.
Yes. At the time that you arrived, was there any discussion or any information sources about the death of Lumumba?
Well, a lot of people were talking about it, but we didn't. We weren't concerned with it.
Right.
At least I wasn't.
Was there any indication that there was any complicity on his death on part of any of the Western governments or the United Nations?
None. I mean, no serious person ever attributed Lumumba's death to anything more than a inter-Congolese affair. And if anyone was involved, it would have been either Mobutu and or Kazabumbu.
So it was felt that it was a mid between tribal type of rivalry.
Well, tribal plus politics.
Politics. Now, also, you arrived after the change in the U.S. administration from the Eisenhower administration to the Kennedy administration. Did there seem to be any policy change towards the Congo?
Not that I was aware of.
The Kennedy administration was handling it pretty much the same way that the Eisenhower had handled it. Did Lumumba's death have any effect on the State Department policy, for example, towards the Katanga secession, or what was the U.S. policy towards the secession?
Well, we were opposed to the concession, the secession, because we saw that the secessionists were strongly supported by the Belgians and the French, and would force the rest of the Congo to go to the left. In other words, if there was any warfare between the Katangese and the rest of the Congo, that would not only be a tragedy, but also that the Katangis undoubtedly being overtly supported by the Belgians, the French, mercenaries, etc., and the rest of the Congo would have to turn to the east, and the rest of the Congo would move in a radical direction.
Who were some of the principal actors in the Congo during the time that you were there, in the embassy, and who did you work with? Who did you have contact with at the UN operation there?
Well, I had a lot of contact with Jerry Leonard, and we became actually very good friends. And there were other people in the UN that we used to see a lot of, and we cultivated them both socially and professionally. On the Congolese side, of course, there was Kasavubu, who was a rather austere, cold fish. There was Anula, who was a rather warm, intelligent, quite well-versed in politics and a little bit even in business. There were other Congolese, Bumboko, Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mendeli, Mendeli, who was the banker, Kasongo, I forgot what he was. I just remember the name.
And then was Ralph Bunche still there at that time?
No. Ralph came out at the time of the Katona negotiations. But he wasn't there when I got that. He'd already left.
He had already left. So who were the main people at the UN that you...
Jerry Leonard.
Gardner.
Chiari. Those are the top three, but Leonard definitely ran the show. Very, very capable man.
And how often did you get together with them to discuss issues? About how often did you get together with them?
Four times. Once a day.
Once a day. Very often.
Times.
So you were, Hammarskjöld was still Secretary General when you were there. What were the circumstances around his flight to Ndola and his ultimate death?
That was a tragedy in that we all were convinced of what we know was violent error. And he was going up to Ndola to meet with the British and hopefully with Chombe, and to try to convince Chombe to give up the possession. And they didn't file a flight plan. And they filed a false flight plan. So that when the plane was overdue, they didn't know where to look. As a matter of fact, we heard about the disappearance about 8 o'clock that morning. And I went to see Leonard. And a fellow named Morrison, who was a Canadian airman, who was in charge of the Air Force, the Congolese Air Force. And we had a very competent air attaché who happened to be in Elizabethville at that time. And all the UN Air Force, such as they had, was put under the command from this American airman. We didn't bother telling Washington about it. And because he was such a competent guy. And actually, he was the one that found the remains of the aircraft. And was right near the Indola airfield. And Maclick went to the aircraft. And he identified, actually, Periscope's body. And then they went into the apartment. I think it was a C-54. And they checked the landing manual for a C-54, you know, what the pressures would be, things like that. Mm-hmm. Everything was fine, except they were 300 feet too low.
Oh. So did there seem to be any indication of sabotage?
Well, no, not at all.
No.
That was all malarkey.
Really? So it was strictly an accident?
No, as I say, Ben Matley went into the cockpit, and then he had the manual for landing, was a C-54 or whatever the aircraft was, that what your pressure would be here,
these things.
Yeah. Everything was perfect, except the altimeter was 300 feet too low.
Uh-huh. So at what point then did Utant take over for Hammarskjöld?
Oh, I don't know that.
Shortly after that.
Oh yeah.
Did you work with Utant as
no,
well?
I was out in the Congo.
By that time you were out of the Congo. Okay. Did you work with other embassies and consulates as well?
Oh yes. Worked very closely with the British.
With the British?
The French. Uh-huh. The Germans, West Germans. Mm-hmm. The Belgians, of course, mm-hmm. very closely. And
The British and the Belgians, what was their attitude towards the Katanga secession?
The British thought the same way we did. But London was a little bit nervous about it, and they were not as definite as we were in supporting Kimbova against Blue.
Uh-huh.
The Belgians, of course, in Leopoldville were not that broken down as Brussels. And then they, however, had to be rather careful. And they were not as strong supporters of the UN as we were.
Mm. All right. So the U.S. embassy there was the strong supporter of the UN operation. Yes.
No way.
And the British were not quite as strong a supporter. Uh-huh. Was there a time at which they changed their attitude and became more in support of the operation?
I was aware of.
No. So it remained about the same. Were you involved in the setting up of the meeting in Katona?
Well, very much so.
Yes. Could you explain something about how that meeting came about and your involvement in that?
Well, the meeting came about by the desire of Washington, but the far desire to see an end to the hostility that the secession of Katanga. And Ben Gunion was ambassador, and President Kennedy was very much involved. And we got Tommy to agree to come up to Katona. And the UN, of course, was the agency, being the intermediary, or the mediator, went, but actually much of the impetus came from us.
So it was the U.S. Embassy that had really brought the meeting together, had it inspired the meeting in Katana.
Well, I would say we brought it together, but we helped in every way we could, logistically, but yeah. Otherwise. Mm-hmm. And Ben Gunion and I went there and did what we could in supporting Ralph Munch, who came out for them. More than meeting.
Okay.
And we were sort of munching the Leopoldville element and also actually the Katanga element.
Mm-hmm.
There were no other non UN foreign people at Katanga.
Uh-huh. And Prime Minister Abdullah and Chambe were there at the meeting.
Yeah.
What were the results of, what kind of agreements were come to at the meeting?
You'll have to check that out with the State Department.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure it's in the record.
Yeah. But the fighting actually did continue after that, so that the meeting did not produce a ceasefire, is that correct?
I can't remember.
Yeah.
But all that ought to be in the State Department records.
Yes, right.
I assume you have those. You brought the telegrams in Washington?
No, I have not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, were you involved as a part of the embassy in informing the UN or the ONU operation there on political developments, either on the U.S. side or internationally?
Well, but really. We shared most of our information with the UN,
mm-hmm.
but similarly, they shared theirs with us.
Yes.
So we're presenting very close.
Yeah. So there was a good cooperation.
Well,
yeah.
100%.
Good. What kind of logistics for the Congo operation did the U.S. supply?
Golly, I forgot. No. The UN, well, one of what we supported the UN financially we were one of the major developments there.
Uh-huh.
We didn't have any aircraft in direction of the UN. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That ought to be in the records.
Yeah, yeah. Did the U.S. supply personnel and other kinds of civilian?
There were very few Americans in the UN staff in Leopoldville.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I don't recall many of them.
Mm-hmm. Did the U.S. supply any assistance outside the UN channel?
Well, no.
To individuals or?
You mean personnel?
Mm-hmm.
No. There were, of course, the missionaries, people like that there,
mm-hmm.
Americans.
Yeah.
But no, we didn't have any officials. What we did purposely, we followed as much of our assistance as possible through the UN. That we avoided covert bilateral aid program because by so doing we could keep out the Soviets.
Mm-hmm.
If we did it through the UN, then we could get the UN to tell the Soviets going through the UN.
Awesome.
And actually we got the Congolese to tell the Soviets, do it through the UN.
So you didn't want to establish a precedent for bilateral arrangements, because then they could also go to the Soviets for the same in the same manner. Yeah, I see. I understand that. Uh, Are there any specific comments that you would like to make about your stay in the Congo or your involvement later on through the State Department when you were back in Washington?
Well, it was a fascinating thing. And it was a very demanding job. And we, of course, were very much perturbed by the American far right. In other words, Thomas Dodd, and men of that ilk, Senator from Connecticut.
Yes.
A horrible man, filthy person. And then,
what kind of problems was Senator Dodd creating?
Well, he was 1,000% for Chombie.
Oh.
Against the policy of his government.
Mm-hmm.
And made no bones about it. Made speeches in Congress on behalf of Chombie, about the Ganang in possession. And was in very close touch with Chombie's man in this country, by Michel Strulens.
Oh.
And Strulens actually was writing some of the speeches that Dodd gave on the Senate floor.
Did he have much influence in the Congress? Was there?
Well, he was the particulate right.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
He had some support.
And he had some support.
Strangely enough, I think he was a Democrat.
Right, strangely enough, right.
But one group we saw a lot of was the Israeli embassy. And Israel's policy at that time was identical with ours.
Uh-huh.
And they were very helpful, extremely intelligent, professional diplomats.
Yeah. There was a lot of criticism of the UN operation from many sides. What were some of the major criticisms, and did you find them to be well founded?
Major criticism we were conscious of was the American far right, who was supporting Katangi possession, which the UN was trying to suppress, and then the military operations conducted by the UN were criticized by again the far right, that Trump do-gooders.
But did you feel that any of those criticisms were well-founded, or?
Well, no, not the policy ones, because we were 100% in support of the UN. Some of the administrative, there might have been small instances of poor administration that helped many organizations as that, including our own.
Right. Were you able to observe at all how the UN troops conducted themselves while you were in Congo?
Well, I didn't personally.
Uh-huh.
But certainly John Dean, who was there at Ben Elizabeth Hill,
yes.
Knew a lot about it. But people had to discuss that with
me. Yeah. But in general, was the opinion that the UN forces were well-disciplined and...
Well, a lot depended. The Gurkhas, for example, were outstanding troops. They always have been. The Irish, strangely enough, weren't any good.
The Irish?
Yeah,
the Irish troops.
Young, very young people.
No, it was something else.
They were great people for fighting in bars. When it came to shooting, they weren't very good. The Ethiopians left a lot to be desired. The Swedish Air Force, of course, was outstanding. The Canadians were but a few people. The one that really
Oh, is that
the
right?
Nigerians and the police unit out there did most of the policing in Bougainville. They also had one or two battalions, Nigerian troops, again, who were first grade, but again, who had British company officers. The head man would be a Nigerian, but the company officers, to a large degree, were being still Englishmen, and they were first rate.
They were first rate. You were in Leopoldville. Was there any problem with your personal safety or the safety of other foreigners in Leopoldville?
Well, except for the Nigerians, there was no police force. There was a lot of vandalism. There were unpleasant incidents involving Europeans. That the Danish embassy was burglarized one night. And there were seven or eight people there. They went in and they took the bed clothes off the ambassador's bed. Me and his wife slept in the nude. They were scared to death. That brightness up. With Americans, we had one or two incidents. One American shot a robber. And we got him out of the country pretty fast. But then, of course, we had the tragedy of the army attaché who was shot. And that bit the press here, rather lurid fashion.
Really? What had happened with that? How was he shot?
He was in bed. And someone came.
I think I'll just stop this